This is the Cleveland Real Estate Investor Podcast with Mike Riley and Mike Ferrante. Today we discuss grannyized homes, things to pay attention to during an inspection, getting a short-term rental while you watch the market, and more. But first, a word from our sponsor. The Cleveland Real Estate Investor Podcast would like to give a shout out to a couple cool places we'd like to get takeout from in the Cleveland Heights area. The first one being Zug in Cedar Fairmount, the other being Chimmy on Lee Road. Two great places with one-of-a-kind takeout, ghost kitchens for, you know, just being able to order, curbside pickup, whatever you like. So when you go, you can say that the Cleveland Real Estate Investor Podcast sent you.
All right, we are back for two podcasts in one day. We have Mike Ferrante, who is now out of his car into his office, so his vocals are gonna be a lot cleaner, folks.
Right.
So, Mike, tell me about your showing before we get into our deep dive.
So actually today I visited with another agent who's managing some properties for an overseas investor, a guy from France. And the guy from France has lost his butt. Sound familiar? Lost his butt.
Well, at least he didn't get shot in the butt like our investor.
Well, that's part of the problem. He never came here. You know, he's never been here. He bought these houses sight unseen. You know, I mean, Mike, you could almost tell the story and I haven't even told you what happened yet, but you know, he's got some management in place and there's some discrepancy between, you know, how he feels the manager has done and what the manager feels he's done. And anyway, the guy's just ready to bail. He just wants to get his money and get out of here because he's lost his rear end on these houses. The houses are in various stages of disrepair, partially tenanted, and it's just a real mess. So the investor contacted me and said, hey, can you evaluate what's going on and help me extricate myself from this situation I'm in? And so I'm looking at it, deciding, you know, what the best recommendation for him is and whether or not I want to get embroiled in it.
And what's your gut telling you?
My gut's telling me run away, but you know, I'm kind of a sucker for a sob story. So I feel like I'm going to at least look at it and see if I can give the guy some good advice and we'll see if I end up actually helping him get out of the sticky mess that he's in. But it might just be more than I'm able to bite off right now. So we'll see.
Right. Well, yeah, I'm thinking of our topic today, which is grannyized.
So you like that segue, word, huh?
Let's segue into that. Grannyized. Define that.
So any of our real estate professionals listening know that term. It's something that is coined, meaning dated. You know, it's grandma and grandpa's house. Probably good bones, as they say, meaning, you know, no big structural issues. The house has been well maintained by grandma and grandpa, but they still have their 50s carpet and maybe 70s wallpaper, and the kitchen still is got pink cabinets and green tile in the bathrooms and all that kind of stuff. So perfectly habitable house, but hasn't been updated cosmetically in a long time. That's grannyized.
And from a contracting standpoint, what's interesting about those houses is that the bones and the mechanicals are all A+, because grandpa and grandma, they always made sure that the furnace was working. It's a newer furnace, if not a new furnace, the AC, the roof, the electrical box. I mean, all the mechanicals are rock solid. And that's usually where your big dollars are spent. If you have to get into, you know, the roof, the furnace, the electrical, leaky basement, etc. So if you don't have to deal with those mechanicals, now you're just talking about shining, polishing up a nickel.
Yeah.
Or buying an old, an old oven, stove, or fridge, and just giving it a good clean. And all of a sudden, you've got a great functioning appliance. So we really look for those grannyized houses in terms of our purchases, because to the average eye looking at it, seems like, wow, I got to redo the whole house. Well, exactly. That's great. You want to redo the whole house from a decorating standpoint because you want to stamp your own individual style on it.
Right.
But and a lot of that stuff you can do, or you could do it in stages. You could do the main rooms, the master, save the back bedrooms for, you know, another time. You know, because the rooms themselves are clean, but they're just not updated. Correct?
Yeah, that's quite often the case. And, you know, certainly buyers can get what we call sweat equity. If they want to do a little bit at a time and do it over time, they can put their stamp on it, as you said, and gain some sweat equity. But I also know a lot of people just want to get in there and, you know, hire someone to just do it all at once so they can enjoy their house instead of always having a project, you know, and I've seen both. I'm not saying one's right or wrong, but certainly there are people who like one way and some people who like the other.
Now, do you see bidding wars going on with these grannyized houses?
Well, I think that every house has some competition on it right now. It's you almost have to be hiding your listing to not have people interested in it. But I think to your point from earlier, the ones that are going the fastest and the ones with the most competition are the ones that are fixed up, priced right, and in desirable locations. If it needs updating, like these grannyized homes, a lot of times the investors shy away from them because there's not quite enough work needed for them to have their margins, and the owner occupants are busy. A lot of owner occupants don't want to deal with it. So I would say there is less competition for something that's grannyized.
Right. Right. And the people that are putting these houses on the market, the irony of it is, and I've had these conversations like you have with my older customers, they think this house look great. It looks great. I mean, looks good to them. Yeah, I love this wallpaper. It was put up in the 70s.
Right.
You know, that kind of orange look.
Yeah.
What's wrong with an orange formica in the kitchen with a, you know, yellow backsplash tile? Or a black and purple tile in a shower that works, you know, is functioning. They don't see anything wrong with it. And you know, the irony of it is they still remember what it was like when they bought the house because it was a given that you were going to be doing some sweat equity. They keep thinking, well, the buyer will want to do something. Let them do it. That's their attitude. And up until now, the last 10 years, there was so much inventory that people would just, why should I do work on this house when I can just go down the street and get, you know, a fixed up house? Well, now there's a line out the door for that fixed up house. So it's ironic how it's coming back now where people will take a hard look at buying a house that does need some work, not a lot of work, but some work.
Yeah. And then of course we get into the whole idea of financing. If it needs too much work, then your owner occupants have a hard time competing because they have to do a renovation loan or they can't get regular financing. So there is a fine line there. But certainly grannyized is the right term. And those are the houses that are habitable, but need cosmetic updating.
Well, we had talked a couple of weeks ago about these nightmare homes and probably your guy from France, Jacques. anyways, so Jacques comes in and I'm sure he hired an inspector. He's checking all the boxes here. He's got
maybe,
a realtor.
Maybe,
I'm assuming
maybe not.
Maybe he didn't. I've seen people. We had our Nila View customer in California that we helped them. We helped her dodge a bullet. And but if the important thing is when you do an inspection of a house for the grannyized type house, I think the inspection should serve two tracks. One is, obviously, is there anything lurking that the buyer needs to know about? But more importantly, a roadmap of what you have to do, what you could contract out to a company to do, and what you would go down what you would do later. So this is where the man hours come into play. And we've done that a lot with our customers on the contracting side, where we've said, hey, listen, we'll do this. This is about 500 hours. This is about $30,000 worth of work. But we'll give you kind of a running start, but you're going to have another 500 hours to do X, Y, and Z. So they understand that this is not going to be finished for about 6 months, given my availability to work. But if you can get it to a point where it's not going to be disturbing them, like I said, the back bedrooms, maybe doing the bathroom, the guest bathroom the following year. I think it's important from an inspection standpoint to give a roadmap in terms of hours that are going to be needed to complete the project over the course of a 2-year time frame. Comments?
I agree, Mike. I think that there are inspectors who are really good at doing that and others who don't. The ones who don't feel they're simply there to make observations. Hey, I see these three things that are wrong with the house, period. The ones I really enjoy working with are the ones that put it in perspective. So they say, here are two things that need to be addressed right now. Here are some other things that you need to monitor. That's the word I see them use. And they'll even go so far as to tell you, you know what, your roof looks like it's halfway through its anticipated life. You know, maybe you've got 12 years left on the life of your roof. I think that's great, because then your homeowner has the opportunity to start budgeting for these big ticket items. And that's, I think, what people should be looking for in their inspector. Just making the observation, in my opinion, is not enough. Now, the inspectors might argue, well, you know, we don't want to get into that gray area. And the more we say, the more liability we expose ourselves to. But I say, no, you're the expert. You need to give your advice and your input.
And a lot of times I'll look at inspector reports that are like a phone book. Boy, they look good. I mean, they look official. But on further inspection, tell me a story about what I might be buying. Let's sum it up into a elevator speech.
Yeah. Well, and some of the inspectors do that. They'll give you the full report, but then they'll also give you a really nice summary section. And that's usually where I go directly to is, you know, show me the summary. Because you're right, they are really thick and there's a lot of information there that's useful. But the ones that I think are smart do that summary section. That's the stuff I need to worry about right now.
Right, exactly. So here's a potential game plan for somebody who's moving into Cleveland and looking to buy a house. The first thing you want to be able to do is do a short-term rental. That takes the pressure off. Short-term rental coming in allows you to do a deeper dive in what's available, not just what's showing up right now on the MLS. What could be coming to the market in a month or two? What could be foreclosures? What could be, well, I don't know, what are the other boxes people would look in if they have the flexibility to take their time in buying a house?
Yeah, well, it's waiting for new listings to hit the market too. I think what's happening right now, one of the reasons that prices are being driven up so dramatically is that buyers are experiencing this sense of desperation. They feel like, I've got to get this house now because I'm not in a flexible position. Our house closes on this date, or our lease is up on this date, or my job starts on this date. I have to be here by this date. I think doing the short-term rental, just as you put it, gives you the flexibility and it takes away some of that desperation, I have to have this house right now.
Right. And some of our short-term rentals, they start at $2,500 a month. And I think $2,500 a month to $3,500 a month, that's the general range for your basic three bedroom, $2,500. That's less than staying at a hotel.
Oh, that's, yeah,
a nice neighborhood. That's in a, you know, we're cutting the grass. It's furnished, so they don't have to, they can put their furnishings in storage. And when you really think about it, if they're spending $2,500 or $3,000 instead of $1,500 to $2,000 on their mortgage, they're probably over a 5 to 6 month stay in these properties. They're spending about $6,000 to $7,000 more than had they just bought a house. But think of how much money you're saving. I mean, that is money well spent, as opposed to getting into a bidding war for a house where you may be spending $30,000 over asking.
Yep.
$25,000 to $30,000 over asking. And in reality, I think for a lot of those houses that are getting into these bidding wars, those houses are overvalued, I think. I think the initial listing with a price bump is closer to what the true value of the house is. And you don't want to be getting into a bidding war. And that's the nice thing, where if you got a cash offer, where you don't have to get into financing, you can take your time, you can be the, do your due diligence, be the savvy shopper, maybe wait for the market to cool a little bit in August, when people are on vacation. I mean, when do you think this thing's going to cool down, Mike?
Well, I do think that the seasonal slowdown will still occur. So I think right now we're going to, now through July, August, we're going to have the most intense competition. But every September, October, things tend to slow down. So I think we'll have a little bit of relief then. But we're all kind of asking ourselves, when are things going to normalize? When are they going to even out? I think that as long as rates are as low as they are, that you're still going to have some pretty intense competition for the foreseeable future. I've heard people saying years, that we're not a year away from things leveling out, that it's years plural.
No, no way. No way. I don't agree with that. I think the Fed's going to tick up the interest rates.
I think they have to. Yeah, and I think they should.
They will. It will. They're not going to overnight just jack it up 2 basis points. No, they're going to, it's going to tick up. So I think by the time we get into a fall, interest rates will be a little higher, and that's going to flush out a lot of the demand now, because people will be not able to get a loan.
Yeah. So, one theory I heard, Mike, is that when the rates do start to creep up, that what you're going to actually see is a short-term increase in demand, because people are going to panic. They're going to say, oh, I got to lock in my rate now while it's still in the threes. I don't want to be in the fours and the fives, which historically fours and fives, that's not a bad rate for a mortgage. But but again, they're saying that might cause a short-term uptick in demand. And then, of course, you know, when that is done, then the higher price of money should minimize the demand to some extent.
Right. Here's another little twist. What happens if you're coming in and you want to move into a house right away? You go to the seller and say, listen, I'll rent from you for 3 months while this thing winds itself through. Is there any appeal to the seller?
Well, we saw more of that when the market was down, when it was a buyer's market. So for example, 2008 through 2012, when you couldn't give a home away, then you had more rent to owns or short-term lease options, where maybe a buyer was working on credit or there was some other reason for them to delay their purchase. Now with the market being the way it is, most sellers would rather have their, so I mean, I'm sure there are instances where that could appeal to a seller, but I'd say it's more rare now than when it was a buyer's market.
I'm not even talking about a rent to own. What I would talk about is somebody who says, listen, I want to buy this house. We agree on a price. I want to get in, move in now. The place is empty. We'll rent for you for 2 months while it closes, and I'll put $20,000 down. I mean, really, you've got a purchase agreement. You want to move in there now. It's vacant. If I'm the seller, I'm going to think to myself, well, listen, I've got somebody in here who's going to take care of the house while it's vacant.
Yeah. If it's vacant, yes. In an occupied home where the seller is the owner and they're living there.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah. Yeah. But sure, there's definitely certain instances where I think that makes sense. Yeah.
I think you need to really, in this type of market, really think outside the box, because the rules are being rewritten in Cleveland. So the grannyized house has a lot of appeal. In fact, for the grannyized house, that kind of flexibility you're given to an older person, where they've got to get all their memorabilia together. They might need 3 months to gather things up. I mean, they've lived in the house for 30, 40, 50 years.
Sure.
This is kind of a wrenching move for them. So if you have the ability to rent short term and give these people 4 or 5 months to take their things, organize their things, move them to the retirement home or wherever they're going, then at the same time, you could start moving some of your stuff in and everybody wins. And you would be making a very powerful offer to buy the house that checks multiple boxes for the potential seller.
Yeah. Well, and that opens up the conversation to what we're experiencing right now as real estate agents. You know, the old school way of helping a buyer as a real estate agent was you wait for new inventory to hit the market. You wait and see what comes up on the MLS, and then you show it to your buyer, you write your offer, and hopefully you get it. What we're arguing now is that, look, just passively waiting for new homes to come up isn't good enough anymore. Your buyers are getting frustrated, anxious, and angry. So the new job description of a buyer's agent is you better also be out there prospecting for homes. So, I mean, it could be something as simple as mailing postcards to a neighborhood. Buyer need. Hey, I have a buyer in Lyndhurst looking for a ranch. Are you considering selling your ranch home? You know, and a lot of times we'll tell the people who are receiving the postcard a little bit about the buyer. This is actually a real world example too, by the way. Meet Erica. She's pre-approved up to 275 and she needs to buy your ranch home. Thinking of selling? Contact me.
Right. Or your neighbor, or you take an area of, say, Cleveland Heights, the Fairmont Cedar area. A lot of great houses there. And you just do a mailer in an area where you want to be, and you call up. I mean, there's companies that do these mailers all the time, and you do a targeted mail, and you just hit that, and you have a link, maybe to, you know, a YouTube segment where, hey, I'm so and so, and I'm legitimate. I want to move in your area. I grew up in that area. My parents live around the corner, and this and that. So you're telling these people I'm legitimate. Let's do a private deal.
That's right.
I mean, hate to say it, Mike, but they're bypassing the realtor.
Yeah. And and that's why I say the realtors, the new job description better include some of that. Otherwise your buyers don't need you. There's a buyer we're working with right now, a house that I'm renovating here in Twinsburg. We went ahead and sold her this house without even putting it on the market. It's a good story. You know, I'm sure we're leaving some money on the table, but at the end of the day, found her through Facebook. She posted in a Twinsburg group, hey, looking for a house in Twinsburg. So here's an example of a buyer whose agent wasn't doing this prospecting for her. She posted in this Twinsburg group that I happened to be in. And I said, hey, I got a house in Twinsburg. Met her, negotiated the deal. Next thing you know, the house is sold and it's not even done being rehabbed yet.
Yeah. Well, I did a variation of that with our Pepper Pike home, where a longtime customer of mine is selling. His wife just died. He's going to put the house on the market. He called me out. Mike, what do I do? What do I need to do? And I looked around. I looked at the house. I said, wait a minute. You know, before you go to your realtor and sign a contract and lock into that 5-6%, let me make you an offer. And 3 days later, took my wife out. We looked at the house. We made him an offer, and we're waiting to hear back. But it was a great offer for him. gives him the flexibility. We're going to take the furnishings. He doesn't have to worry about that. I mean, we talked about that in the last podcast. So I think the two words here are the grannyizing and the prospecting, to be proactive.
Yeah.
In terms of, if you're going to be an owner occupied as opposed to an investor like me, you know what, you've got to really think outside the box.
I agree.
I think, Mike, our next podcast is going to be following the travails of Jacques. So why don't you start keeping some notes? And we will, on our next podcast, revisit another investor who took a bullet. He didn't get literally in his pocketbook.
Yeah. You know, interesting side note to that story, Mike. Jacques, as we'll call him, contacted me a little over a year ago and we exchanged a few emails. He decided to work with someone else and, you know, not trying to toot my own horn here, but, you know, he ended up going down a path that he's unhappy with. So, you know, it really is some validity to picking the right people to work with. You know, not that we're perfect, but we've been through this enough times. We've heard these stories, you know, we have some good insight to give people. And if they would just listen.
Yeah. Well, I think that could be said for a lot of people, your accountant, your financial planner, where you tell people, like we've talked to people the last 10 years working together. We said, do you want to have this conversation now or do you want to have it later?
Yeah,
we are going to have this conversation. So if you don't do your, you can go back and listen to some of our podcasts, the check boxes that you need, you should go through before you buy any investment property in Cleveland. If you don't, it's like playing Russian roulette. Only this time, I can assure you, instead of just one bullet in the chamber, there's probably 5 bullets to 6 chambers.
Yeah.
And it's guaranteed that it's going to blow up in your face. So
a lot of sad stories.
Yep. Yep. A lot of compelling stories in the Naked City for those who remember that series. All right, Mike, we got 2 podcasts in today. We're going to pick this up, write it down, keep your journal. Next week, we'll talk about the trials and tribulations of Jacques in our next episode. All right.
Sounds good. Always a pleasure.
All right. Enjoy the sunshine.
Yep,
okay.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Cleveland Real Estate Investor Podcast. You can find all our episodes on www.riley-properties.com, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Spotify, and more. We've also started uploading our audio to YouTube. You can find us at thecleveland realestateinvestor.com. You can subscribe, like, comment, whatever you like.